Hi, what's up? My name is Chris Red. And I feel lucky as a motherfucker about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Now listen to me. There'll be no swearing on this show.
No swearing?
This show is for children. By children.
I started swearing at 4 years old at Barney. I was like, clean up. I was like, fuck you, look. Doc.
Fall is here. Hear the yell. Back to school. Ring the bell. Brand new shoes. Walking blues. Climb the fence. Books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey, Conan O'Brien here. Welcome to another episode of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I'd like to point out again that I am I'm in New York City, recording studio, and my team, my posse, if you will, Sonam Osesi and Matt Gourley, are comfortably in their homes.
Comfortably.
Well, you've seen, yeah you're both wrapped in, looks like, caftans, and Gourley is wearing one of those blankets that's also kind of a shirt. What is it called?
Oh, a slanket?
Your slanket.
Snuggie.
A snuggie.
A snuggie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You look very happy. I'm here. If you notice any edge to my voice, again, it's because I'm infused with a certain urban grit that comes from fighting your way through the concrete jungle in order to podcast. I'm here and I almost feel feral because I've been prowling around Manhattan. Living by my wits.
Yeah, I can see that you are wearing, you're topless with just a leather vest on.
Yes.
It's impressive.
I was cruising. It's called cruising. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was told that.
How did that go?
I was told that that people cruise in, that's the cool thing to do, go cruising sort of in Times Square. And I didn't realize it was, that's from like 50 years ago.
So, yeah.
I made the mistake of putting on, I'm not wearing much, and what I am wearing is leather. And I went cruising around what I thought was a seedy, sort of skeevy Times Square. It turned out to be absolutely like Disney, like Disneyland. Mm. It's changed completely. People seemed very upset about what I was doing, and it's I guess I was more out of place than I thought I would be. But I met a guy dressed as Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I met a guy dressed as Batman. Both of them had fanny packs, and I took pictures with both of them.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I gave them each $10.
Okay.
That is my version of cruising, is just getting my picture taken with different DC and Marvel heroes and then giving them $10.
So that's gritty. Wow, you're so hard, Conan.
You bet I am. Man.
Did you say you walked to the studio today, or did you take the car we got for you?
Well,
yeah, pretty gritty.
I took a very gritty Chevy Suburban, black Chevy Suburban, by my own wits and through my own grit and kind of just fight or flight mechanism. I managed to get into the back seat and put on my seatbelt.
Uh-huh.
And sit pretty quietly.
Wow.
While the car drove about 5 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
to get here to
so
the recording.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
How'd you survive?
Yeah.
Well, it was difficult, but there it turns out there is a temperature control just for the back seat, and I was able to operate that.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, because the driver wanted it to be 71. I prefer 68, so I was able to adjust it. And then I cracked the window a little bit. I was worried there wouldn't be mints, but there was a choice between Lifesaver, Wintergreen, and Tic Tac, little Tic Tacs. And so I went with the Tic Tacs.
Man,
so,
you ought to write a memoir. This is
it's
a life I can't understand.
Your story about being out in the streets, it's inspirational.
I just hope that my children have a better experience than I've had. I hope they never have to face what I faced today, getting to this podcast studio down near Bryant Park in what appears to be a very lovely Manhattan. excited about our show today. My guest today is a cast member on Saturday Night Live and stars in the NBC series Keenan. I'm thrilled he's with us today. Chris Red, welcome. you're the like 35th guest in a row to say motherfucking proud to be Conan O'Brien's friend.
Oh, you that's know? Tight.
Yeah, John Lithgow said it. We couldn't get him to stop swearing.
Really?
Oh my God, he's such a filthy guy. I'm just so happy for your success because I met you, I think it's back in 2017.
Yeah, so poor. I was poor and just telling jokes on a roof.
And what happened was I was doing a week of shows at Comic-Con because we used to go there every summer, and we were looking for two really funny guys who could help us out and do sort of 24 – it was almost like 24-hour coverage.
Yeah.
On the roof. And so J.P. Buck, he found you and he found a guy named Moses Storm, and you guys were both on the roof being really funny all day into the night. and I would rush up occasionally and join in, and I would go up there and I'd be like, this roof is really – it's in San Diego in the summer.
Oh, man. It was the hottest thing I had ever experienced outside of – just working outside for minimum wage.
Yeah.
And it was so tight because, I mean, it was me and Moses Storm who we could talk shit anywhere.
Yeah.
And so it was like the kind of the perfect person to do that with. But like, I had been in LA then like I had been going back and forth for like 2 years, and every person I had like watched coming up disappointed me when I met him. So like, for you to be so cool and come up, and I was like, oh, we're in the roof. He's never up here. And then you came up there. We're like, oh, my fucking God, he's here. Yo, he's here. We're doing bits. Oh, shit. He's too rich to do it. I wouldn't do that if I was him.
Yeah. No. Well, I invested poorly. I lost all my money.
Oh, man.
I'll just tell you, it's theme restaurants are what killed me.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a truck restaurant coming up.
Don't do it.
It's called Pick Me Up. Pick me up. Pick me up. It's a.
I'm telling you, Chris. I met you up on this roof, and you were really funny, and you were terrific. And then shortly after that, I hear, hey, did you hear the news? Chris got signed out live, and you clicked right away. You started killing it. You're so funny on the show.
Thanks, man.
And so I was very. I've just been delighted for you. Seriously, you know, so happy for you.
That means a lot, man, because, you know, I saw your picture on the walks. Also, for people who have not been in SNL writer's room on the ninth floor in 30 Rock, there's like pictures of all the writers whose soul they took.
Well, and to be fair, a soul they bought.
Yeah, 100%.
We all sold our souls.
That's exactly right.
Yes,
that's
$600. I have no regrets.
And a blood oath.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just really, really cool to have you say that, man, because your opinion means a lot. And y'all were my family, you know what I'm saying? And still are. And it was like y'all and Will and Grace. Will and Grace had came back, and I had just like got a recurring role on that.
Yep.
And I was like working with y'all all the time. And then when I got that, I didn't believe it at first. And then I didn't know if I was gonna keep it because I was still on like Disjointed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know if I could do both the shows.
Yep.
And so there was a whole like argument for like 2 weeks. So my first 2 weeks of SNL was like, I don't know if I'm gonna be here the whole time.
It's not funny how you go from, it's a very common thing. You plug away at it for a long time, and there's no opportunity. And then suddenly, there are three shows that want you, and there's a fight over where you're going to go.
Yeah.
And it's just as you get Saturday Night Live, and you're thinking, I might not be able to do this because these other two shows want me to do stuff.
Yeah. It's really weird. It's like an embarrassment of riches in that way. But I was like, I love those problems more than searching around for a gig. Because, I mean— Hail marrying your self tapes from Chicago to Hollywood was a hell, man. Like, but everybody in Chicago has to do it, especially if you're on the come up and you can't like afford to fly all the time. Like, you're just in the musty basements, just trying to like do these characters and hope somebody on their lunch break will see your tape.
So, describe the process. You're making a tape. You're doing your characters. You're doing your comedy. Probably showing your stand up. And then you're mailing it?
So you're like, well, you're emailing it.
Oh, you're mailing it. Okay.
But I also like to mail mine, put some weed in there. but it's like,
you know, it's very hard to put weed into an email.
Yeah, it really
I've
is.
Tried.
It really is.
And until they have that technology, what are we really doing?
Well, you can do a weed NFT, but you can't smoke that. But what made it bad is like you want a reader and you're in Chicago. So you're in a city where like people have real jobs. And so the only people who are available to read for you are other actors who are up for the same role.
Yep.
And so they're just like reading, but like with a little less energy than you really want them
and
to get.
And kind of trying to screw you over.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, hey, man. Like, hey, could you just read it normal, B? I'm reading it normal.
Yeah, coughing a lot while you're saying your line.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, man, that was a really good take. Too bad I took a shit on myself.
You know, what I didn't know about you, and this is something we have in common, is we both started out in rap.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Did you start out in rap? I did hear your mixtape, man.
Yeah, yeah. I had, you know, mine was old school. You know, it was I'm Conan O'Brien, and I'm here to say real white guy rap of the mid-80s. But that's how I broke through.
Yeah.
I knew that was my way.
I really liked your joint, Too Big for Small Talk. Like, I love that song so much. It's just one line. And the beat just carries it for 15 minutes.
Once I saw Jump Around, I knew that white Irish guys in Boston were supposed to rap.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's how I got into it.
I love
and it
that.
Kept me out of trouble.
I love that. I really want you to finish the Departed themed album you're doing.
That's a side project I haven't told many people about, but I didn't think there was enough, you know, rapping in most but by white guys my age in most movies, so yeah, I've been working hard on that. And
I'm just glad to see you on your shit, man, just really stretching yourself out, you know what I mean?
I want justice. I want to be represented. I'm sick of people assuming I can't rap because of the color of my skin.
Yeah, because they definitely do that.
This is bullshit. No, I didn't know that you, like, when you were a kid and you were growing up in Missouri, is that right?
I moved around a lot, but I was growing, I grew up and went to high school and middle school in Chicago suburbs.
In Naperville, right?
Yeah, Naperville.
That's where Bob Odenkirk's from, Naperville.
Yeah, I think Bob Odenkirk is the only good thing to come out of Naperville, but besides the cocaine and heroin.
Well, now there's you too, so that's great.
Yeah, but I don't like the city at all because they were racist to me.
Is that true?
Yes, yeah. It was, I had a terrible time in Naperville. I mean, not every day, of course. You know, you can live in hell, and every so often you're like, you know what, it's not cold, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't like the city at all. They got some issues.
Manifest itself? How did that, everybody gave you a hard time because your race?
It's that, and then also, like, I have a big family that we're all from Mississippi. From Mississippi. I put that in quotations, guys, because nobody's from Mississippi, for real.
Right.
What
do you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that where all civilization began?
Come on now. You know, I was talking to somebody, they were like, I was in Mississippi. I don't know where I was at, but I was like, wow, what privilege that is to be in Mississippi and not know where you were at.
Right, right.
No one in my family could ever say that shit ever in their lives.
Right.
Because we're black in Mississippi. You gotta know where you're at all times. I've never been down there. I'm like, oh, I don't know where this is, but it's lovely. You know what I mean?
I'm just floating around, drifting through Mississippi.
Just drifting through. But it was like I found myself like caught in the middle sometimes because I was all, like, my family was in the city. They was on the west side and the south side of Chicago, and then we moved up to the suburbs. So I was like too suburb to be hanging out with my cousins. They were like, you're not hard enough to kick it with us. But I was always out there trying to kick it with them. But then I would go to school and it was like, well, you're not white enough to be kicking it with us. So then I was kind of like stuck in the middle and just kind of feeling bad. I was feeling bad about my parents doing well. Right. And then on top of that, they didn't really like care for the rap and shit too much. But I just pushed through anyway. So all that kind of manifests into who I am now.
And you got, you know, I have this theory, I'm serious about this, which is that I think sometimes if you grow up and you don't quite know what your identity is, It actually helps you.
100%. My drive was finding who I was. And when I was rapping, and I still rap, but like when I was rapping and trying to build a career out of it, that was my identity, was I rap, and I'm trying to find myself in that. And I think because you're like always insecure about it and like trying to figure it out, you're trying shit. So you I was trying stuff all the time. Like I didn't have money, but like I would take my dad's old shirts, mix it with some jeans and try to come up with a new style. I'm like, yo, so I looked ridiculous. I had like business blazers up top, but like hood shit at the bottom. So I was like, I was trying to match. I was like, see, I'm from the burbs and the streets, son. You can see it in my clothes. And I just looked like two incomplete motherfuckers on one person, you know?
So when you're sitting down, you're working for IBM.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you stand up,
I'm an A&R for Def Jam.
Constantly tricking people.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a business meeting. I'm sorry. No, I'll stand up. Oh, Jesus Christ.
And it was wild, but it was like, but when I look back now that I do comedy, because I wasn't doing comedy back then, like I was into comedy and studying it, but only because I had like social anxiety. And so I was like, oh, if I'm funny around people, that's kind of like my way in to get comfortable. And then I can just like actually just relax.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but if you're rapping, that's getting you on your feet and using your verbal skills.
Yeah.
And also there's a big... because people love to hear me analyze rap. Trust me, that's a huge part of this podcast. But there's energy, swagger. You can take on different personas. In a weird way, it's not bad training.
It's not.
To get you into stand-up, I would think.
It's not at all. Like, once you really, like, just dive in the stand-up. I was scared of stand-up, though, because, like, no beat, nothing to hide behind. You know, you're kind of just out there. But if you're doing music, right, that's kind of the same thing. You're just packaging it up in a studio and then,
yep,
and then giving it to the world. But I have a stuttering issue that I always had when I was a kid, and rap helped me. I learned how to catch up with my thoughts and slow down, like, so I wouldn't stutter so much. But I wasn't my authentic self. So
right.
It'd be interesting to make music. It is interesting to make music now where I'm not like prejudging it. Like when I was younger trying to make a record, I was trying to write like who I am, but I was more trying to like look at what was popular and like try to fit in with that.
That's what we all do,
right?
On the whatever you want to call it, on the way up, on the, yeah, journey, whatever you want to say.
100%.
Young people think, oh, you know, Chris Redd, I love him. They think you showed up as Chris Redd. They don't know that what they're seeing is years and years and years and years of you not knowing, not being sure, trying different things, struggling, and then starting to find your footing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on some level, you're still going to be figuring it out 5 years from now.
Yeah, no, that's so, so true. And honestly, it's one of the things that like bugs me sometimes, because people will talk to me like I've always been doing exactly what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, in some instances, I'm still not doing exactly what I want to do, but I'm on a good track. But like, I was broke until I was 31 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long fucking time to not have shit, mm-hmm, for yourself, to, yep, watch everybody in their lives look at you like you're fucking crazy. Because I chased two dreams and they didn't pop off until I was 30. So like, imagine your friends looking around at you like, yo, this rap dream, nothing has come of it. And then they're like, so what are you going to do? I remember I stopped rapping at 22. I'm like, I'm done. I'm going to try to figure out something else. And they're like, good, you can go back to school. And I'm like, I'm going to be a comedian. Like, what? Another one? Just fucking do something normal. So I just chose to be broke as fuck all through my 20s. You know, and if this hadn't worked out, I don't know what would have happened. You know what I mean? I would have figured it out. But like, It's like there's so much of who I am, so much of my story is the come up, and when people talk to me like I ain't, like they're like, oh, you don't get what it's like to have a, like one of my uncles, and they can't help it, but I was talking to one of my cousins, and I was like, oh man, they got you working on Thanksgiving. I hate when I had to do that. And then my uncle's like, well, you got to start somewhere. I'm like, nigga, I started there too. I worked, right, at 7 different Olive Gardens because I kept stealing stuff.
But also you love the food.
I do love an Olive Garden. I'm not going to lie. Every time I say super salad, I'm like, We are family. You know what I mean? I love an Olive Garden.
You're going to get so much. They're going to send you crates of cheesy sticks.
Of just, cheesy sticks,
yeah, yeah.
And the thickest Fredo sauce.
Yeah, exactly. no, that's probably the minute you start to hit and things start to gel. There's a little bit of a, well, you lucked out sentiment from some people. And you think, do you want to see the thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of despair?
Man, just so sad. Like, man, like I remember like doing so many shows. And then like this girl I wanted to take out this one time, I had no money. I had $20 and I had $150 worth of shit to do on this date. And I had did so many shows I didn't plan right. But I was like, oh, I'm going to take her to this like wing bar. It's like this. It's like this bar out in Aurora, some suburb that I had never been to, but right. I knew it was nice. And this girl I had went to school with, she didn't like me in high school, but then now she's giving me a chance, and I was like, oh shit, here we go.
And what are you doing at this point? Are you a comedian at this
point? I'm a comedian at this point, but I have no money, right. Obviously. And so I take her. So we're on our way, and GPS is not a thing, like at this
right,
point. So
right.
I had printed out this MapQuest shit, and we get there, and it's a Wingstop, bro, and a very small one at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh shit, I think this took me to the wrong place. Let me just look this up real quick, and then I looked it up, and we were an hour and a half away from where I wanted to take her.
Oh God.
So I looked at her and I looked at the Wingstop and I was like, we here, girl. You can have any flavor you want to have.
Looks kind of nice.
and she was a troop. Her name was Ashley. We're still friends to this day.
Yeah.
But she was so sweet about it, man. She sat in there and ate Wingstop with me in there like I was.
Good for her. Good
for
her.
And she's like, I love your blazer with your hood jeans. And I was like, thank you very much. I'm going for a look. I'm going for a look.
But now you can take her to an even better Wingstop.
Yeah, yeah. I could take her. Man, I could take her to where they kill the chickens, baby.
Right this way, Mr. Mr. Red, I didn't realize it was you. Come on in.
I've been twirling necks and licking lemon pepper all week.
You can help us kill the chickens. Chris Red, everybody. He's going to help us kill chickens. I love hearing these stories of you get the call to come do SNL.
Yeah.
It's going to sound crazy to people, but it's like being in the Marines or something. You can talk to people about it later on, and I can be an old Marine and you can be a young Marine.
Yep.
But there's some stuff that's like, oh yeah, you know, when the bugle blows at 5 and you got to get up and do push-ups.
Yeah.
Doesn't that suck? It sure does. They actually made us do push-ups.
Yeah, for real. No, it's definitely that. And then you feel like you have that camaraderie. I feel like that's what a fraternity. I didn't finish college because I was because I knew my calling. But I imagine that's what a fraternity is like. You know, is you know, you meet people from all walks of life, and they can only we can understand truly what it was like to be and work in that place, because everybody else has that asterisk above it. Like it's still to them, it's like it's all, and it is like a fucking dream job. It's like hell yeah, but it's also like a job. And you need people that you can just talk shit about your job, because everybody talks, no matter what your job is, there's going to be some days you're just shooting the
shit. I've always said that if you're the ice cream tester for Ben and Jerry's, there's a day when you come home and your wife's like, how was it? Oh, fuck. Today there's a new triple ripple fudge. And I had to taste it, and it's fine. I wasn't real, you know, like the best job in the world. Someone's bitching about.
You know,
I just got to get out of this beautiful ice cream factory.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I just found out I'm lactose intolerant. I've been shitting all over the place.
The lactose intolerant ice cream tester for Ben and Jerry's. Please make that a character, and then cut me in for just a piece of the merch.
I got you, B.
But that's the thing is. I'm guessing you were terrified.
Yeah.
We're taping here in New York City all this week and talking to people. And so I've been walking around and I keep passing the hotel where they put my writing partner and I up for 2 weeks while they were testing us out. So Greg Daniels and I.
The Sheridan?
Yeah. Where is it? The Omni? I don't know. But I think it's the, I don't know what it is, but I see it. Uh-huh. And the minute I see it, my body is flooded with anxiety.
It's seared into your mind. Like that Sheridan that I stayed at. And then there's this other little small hotel that's like right across the street from 30 Rock. I forget the name of that joint, but I've been in those two hotels the most when I was first like you know, they fly you out to like do the audition, mm-hmm. and I just remember sitting up there with a Jack and Coke, waiting for Lauren. Our times were pushed back because he was taking a helicopter from the Hamptons. I was like, that's a dope ass reason.
Yeah, yeah. Lauren is actually dope ass. Lauren's reason. One of the stars of Succession this year.
Yeah, man.
He's always. I've got to go into the city to see Chris Redd. Massive helicopter.
It was the first time I was like, they were like, yeah, your audition time's pushed back 2 hours. Like, what? Why? And not like I had nothing else to do.
Now I have to have another Jack and Coke.
Yeah. Oh, God.
What the fuck?
I was like, I just want to get it out the way. What could be the reason? Oh, he's flying from the Hamptons in a helicopter. I'm like, I've never heard a reason like that. I don't think I have enough money to even have her.
No one's ever said it when you were hanging out at the Wingstop.
Right.
Sorry I'm late. My helicopter was having trouble. It's called rich people problems.
Yeah, man. I want to have those problems so bad. I was like, oh, I would love that. I would love that. Oh, sorry. My helicopter got caught in the air. And
you know what's funny is I was on... I did like a tour with a bunch of stand-up comedians, and Moses was one of them. This is a couple like before COVID, but there were times where we had to get from one city to the other city, and the only way to get there really and make it in time was to charter like a plane.
Yeah.
And about halfway through the tour, it became clear to me that all the other comics thought this was my plane.
Oh, 100%.
And it was so funny because at one point, I don't know who it was, but one of the stand-ups was saying, you know, so how do you choose which kind of wood you want in your plane? And I said, what? And they said, did you decide, like, you wanted this kind of wood, or how does it work, like, when you go and pick it up? And I said, pick what up? And I said, wait a minute. And I had to stand and give an announcement and said, I don't have a plane. And their response was, you've been on TV our entire lives, so of course you have a plane. And I'm like, no, I don't have a plane. If I had a plane, I could have it for, I think, a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then there'd be some problems.
Yep.
The plane people would say, these checks are bouncing.
And the plane people.
You don't go and buy a plane.
Yeah, no, absolutely do not. Absolutely. But like people like make those assumptions all the time. I remember I did my first, like one of my first roles was on Chicago PD. And I just played this dude on the West Side who like fixes like some of the cops' cars or some shit like that. And it was like one day shoot. My family saw it and they think that I live in a mansion. They don't come see me. They don't actually come to visit me in Chicago. They're just like, oh, you rich now, boy. You on TV. I'm like, no. I live with a bunch of college students, and I'm in this little cupboard room for like and but the people just love to make those assumptions. That being said, the second I can buy a plane, I don't want to. I'll Uber it out, you know what I'm saying? Just to make so it can make its money. I Airbnb the plane. You know what I mean?
So wait, you're gonna Uber it out so other people can use the plane.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But also you're gonna have people living in the plane. Right?
Yeah, and the pilots they gotta be ready to go at a moment's notice. If I'm working all the time, they working all the time.
That plane's gonna start to smell. I'm just telling you. You're gonna come in there and they're like, no, we just made lunch here. We slept here last night and we just cooked. We just made breakfast.
Hey, man, as long as it smells fresh by the time I get on that motherfucker.
I don't know why this is popping in my head, but Lauren gave me a ride in his amazing plane once. And this is when I was going to move out to L.A. after years and years and years in New York. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking and I'm saying, yeah, I hear you can get like a nicer house if you live in the valley. You can get more land if you live in the San Fernando Valley. And Lauren just cut me off and went, you're not living in the fucking valley. I don't know why. That just, it was like, that was the Yoda wisdom.
Yeah.
You know, Yoda's is like, there is no try, there's only do. And then Lauren just like, you're not living in the fucking valley.
Yeah, get real.
And then I looked around and noticed that, oh, they're bringing out a giant golden avocado for me to eat. I'm getting a massage on this private plane.
That man has wisdom, especially when it comes to like money and, mm-hmm. and having it and knowing what to do with it. And when I told him I was taking a break, he gave me some great advice, which was like, you know, spend a little bit more on yourself just to remind yourself when you get home that you got to get your ass back to work. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I'm definitely going to do that.
Yeah.
And I did it.
Yeah.
So, and that's why I'm here. Y'all paying me, right? No, I'm playing. I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. The money you get for appearing on this podcast is going to stun you. It's going to stun you. It's going to change your life.
Your children's children.
This is ancestral money that will last forever. You know, it was funny. I was, one of the things that I love about watching you is how much fun you're having. First of all, you're 110% committed to whatever you're doing.
Yeah,
you know?
Gotta be.
You have to be, yes. Yeah. But like when you were Kanye, you know, and you had those insane eyes, you were so, and I also can tell you're having a lot of fun. And yeah. I always feel like it's not a lot of people can't do it, but what's simple is when you're having fun, mm-hmm. it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun, especially with like characters like that, because I'm a fan of Ye. He's not a fan of my Ye.
Now did he see your impression?
Oh, he's seen it for sure.
And did he say anything? Did he get back to you?
No, and I've seen him a few times, and I feel like he don't like me that much. you know, it could just be me. You know what I mean? In my head. But uh-huh. I remember we were all like backstage. I forgot whose show it was, but I think I had just did Ye like a few weeks after this, and like Chappelle was there and Rock was there, and they were all back there talking. So we were all talking, and then I walked off to get ready, and I came back over, and Ye was there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all in the semicircle. So I was like, this is cold. So I said, what's up to everybody again? And I was like, what's up, Ye? And he gave me this over the shoulder Batman look. Didn't say a fucking word.
Uh-huh.
And then walked back. I'm like, ah, yay, well, next time then. And then, you know. And we've seen each other several times, man. We got mutual friends. But, like, you know, I just don't think he rocks with it that much. But I met him when I was younger, too. Like, I was at the Austin Township. We used to go to the West Side on Austin Township and, like, do, like, different programs for the kids. And mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and I remember I was young. I was, like, 13. I made this mixtape. And Ye had just, like, he just started getting popular. He just sold some beats to Jay-Z. And, mm-hmm. and it was, like, and that shit was blowing up. So it was him and Common had come to talk to all of us. So I waited till after it was over, and I had my mixtape, and I walked up to Ye, and I was like, Ye, this is my mixtape. I'm a young rapper. Would you mind listening to it? He's like, hell no, I ain't listening to that shit. And he walks up. So that was my first interaction with Ye as a child.
Yeah.
With my first dream. And
you're a child. What does it take to go like, sure, I'll give it a listen. You know, throw it away later.
Well, Common took it, and he listened to it. And then when he came on the show, because I had him on in one of the sketches, he came on the show and we talked about this moment. And he was like, well, right then he couldn't have, you know, he couldn't have his like, it was in his contract. He couldn't pick up mixtapes. I was like, man, you're a good guy coming for your friend. I learned something very valuable that like when you meet your heroes and you meet like some of your favorite artists, sometimes they not going to fuck with you right away or ever. You know what I'm saying? So you got to learn to appreciate and separate the work and the art from the person.
I'm in that school with you. I tried my best to separate. And it's gotten to be a tricky thing because we're in a culture now where they say if someone gets canceled or someone's on, you know, does something that's not cool, we're supposed to hate their work. And I don't know. I have a difficult time with that because especially people in our world, they're flawed, but if they've done something really brilliant, I need to give it up for like that. What you did was really brilliant there. Mm-hmm. You're very talented. And then you may also be deeply screwed up and you probably owe a bunch of people an apology. But I try to keep that's my take on it. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's important because it's been a part of our lives mm-hmm. literally forever. I mean, people talk about how terrible Hitler was, and he was. But there's also this conversation in classes where like, but he was a brilliant war strategist and blah, 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 blah. And it's like,
no, there really wasn't anything. Hitler was also terrible at that.
He was
terrible. terrible.
But it's like, like, how are y'all trying to find, like?
No, no, no. I thought you were going to say for a second, like, Hitler talk about, people talk about what a bad guy Hitler was, but his early comedy albums.
His mustache album was great.
Yeah. The stuff he was doing in San Francisco.
His scientists.
In the 60s.
The scientists that they immigrated into America. We took their scientists. We took their Nazi racist scientists.
We took their rocket scientists, yeah.
Yeah, and we put them into our own government. No. But we can't.
You ruined my whole point when you brought Hitler into it. Because there's nothing. Thanks a lot. I'm like, you know, and I'm trying to think of, like, you know, comedians that I admire, but then later on you find out they've done some bad stuff. And I think, well, I'm trying to tease out. And you're like, yeah, because Hitler. And I'm like, oh, great. Don't pull me into your Hitler bullshit.
Hey, man. Hey, man.
Hitler was a sharp dresser.
Hitler had a coal bin. That boy had a car. He had a car, boy. That car was a tank. Hey, man. Hitler was rapping for all the little motherfuckers in the world.
I have to put out a statement now that I cannot go along with Chris Red's.
I'm not a fan of Hitler.
No, I know.
Need everybody to know. I'm not a fan of Hitler or Adolf.
Your publicist just jumped out the window. Whenever someone's back into a corner of saying, look, I'm not a Hitler fan per se. No, I get your point. I get your point.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he, you know, probably was petted a dog once. But no. Still, you know, what's funny is, you know, we were talking about how lives change or people's perceptions change. There's no way now that people in your life don't think you've got it made, and that adds some kind of pressure to you.
Well, it's like, yeah.
Or your family, there's no way that people don't think, oh, you know, you have no problems anymore.
100%. It's that. And it's like, nah, man, you still have problems, and you got all this other stuff to do. But it's like, I'd rather deal with all the problems now than dealing with all the problems without having resources to handle any of them damn problems. You know, just ignoring it. I mean, it took me a long time just to like stop thinking any number that I didn't know calling me was somebody I owed. You know what I mean? Because I call it like there's PTSD, and then there's like broke memory where you like wake up sometimes and just check your account to make sure you're not in the red. Mm-hmm. And I still do this shit to this day, but I was like, but that's like because I was literally broke for so long. That I people don't really put the math together. Like, I was unsuccessful for way longer than I was successful. Mm-hmm. So I remember that way more than I know this. I'm still learning how to.
You know, there are these stories about Bob Hope, like the huge comedian of the 30s, 40s, 50s. Like, you know, he was incredibly wealthy. So. Early on, like in the 1940s, he starts buying up all the land in the valley where Lauren will never go. But he starts buying it all up with his friends. And so he, you know, by the time 1970s, 80s, he's one of the richest entertainers of all time.
Crazy.
Crazy money. And I know for a fact that late in his life, when he was, he lived to be 97 or something. He lived a really long time. When he was really old, he would have people drive him in. With coupons to a Carl's Jr., or a fast food place. And he would use the coupons to get his hamburger because he had been desperately poor in we're talking now like 100 years ago, but he was desperately poor back then and he never forgot it. And that's the kind of thing that when people have spent time without, often never, ever, ever, ever forget it.
Especially if you were broke in the 30s.
Right, exactly.
Jesus Christ.
That was a different kind of broke.
Yeah, that was tough. That was tough for white people.
The 30s was the last time white people had a difficult...
We definitely had it bad.
You guys had it, yeah. You guys, I'm not saying you didn't. I'm just saying, you're right.
When I see pictures of white people in the 30s, they got soot on their face.
Mm-hmm.
They're not even trying to have blackface. They just work hard. Shit, it's up.
Yeah. I like that. I like your take on the 30s. The last time.
I got hot takes on the 30s on Hitler's car.
Well, you heard it here. Officially, the last time white people had anything legitimate to complain about. We've nailed down the date. It was 1937. March 5th. And then after that, they've got us. They needed to shut up.
Yeah. And now y'all just have to explain January 6th for about 5 years.
Yes. Oh, my God.
That was crazy. That was tight.
Yeah. What were you doing when January 6th happened? Yeah. I was supposed to do, I think, a podcast or something. And it was during COVID. And we were still – so I was supposed to record it from home. And the TV's on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally – you know, the technician and everyone is on, everyone's online telling me, okay, let's get ready to do this. And in the background, I'm watching our country start to come apart at the seams.
Yeah.
And finally just called, I think I called Adam Sachs, who's sitting with us today, who's, you know, in charge of all the world of our podcast. And I said, I don't think we're doing a podcast right now because I think the American experiment is ending
right
now on CNN live.
For real.
And so I don't know where you were, but that was insanity.
I was in New York. We were doing the show.
Well, actually, you were there. I saw you in the footage.
Yeah, I was. I was letting people in the back.
Right. Wait, some people were coming in the back, and it looks like, yes, Saturday Night Live's Chris Redd is holding the door for them.
They told me it was a barbecue. I didn't know what the plan was. I should have known, no, just by the...
What point did you figure out this is not a social occasion?
Oh, when I saw too many woodland jackets. Too many jackets with wood chips on them. I'm like, this is not a barbecue. I want to be at. I mean, bro, there's a lot of things I thought about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the first thought was how musty it must have smelled.
Right.
Because, oh, man, there's too many teeth missing for that shit to smell great. Like, the motherfuckers stank, man.
Yeah. That guy dressed up as a buffalo. You know, he didn't. He hadn't showered.
Hell no. He's just that spray on axe, and he doesn't like hit the skin. He just sprays around it.
He has a friend spray a little axe, and then he walks.
He walks through it. Yeah, it's like it doesn't work. That way, yeah. My guy. Nah.
And then he says, "Why did the spin doctors break up?"
He has to live with that footage forever, man. I think he had kids too.
Yeah,
he the guy like with the buffalo.
Yeah, he's dressed. He's wearing like buffalo horns, and he's all painted. And you know that 5 years from now, he's going to pass the bar somewhere and be like a legitimate lawyer.
Yeah,
and people are going to be bringing that up, and he's going to go, you know, that's not me anymore.
Yeah, man, no, dude, I was just like, I was an animal back then.
It was a weird time.
We were all just really like, we were just stressed out.
Yeah, and that's what you when you're stressed, you try and undo a 220-year constitutional experiment.
Yeah,
that's what we all do when we're stressed.
They were trying to steal the Constitution. And they didn't do what, though, man? Like, read it? Half the people can't read.
I found it. Here it is.
Oh, all right.
I got it.
All right, now, what we going? All right, so, all right, we got it now.
What'd you say?
it's not voodoo, dog. If you can't change it and then things happen. Like it's very weird.
I think they weren't quite sure what they were doing. By the way, I don't think
you don't think they were.
I don't think they had a good thought out plan. That's just me, and I've tried to put this out there before, and people say you're crazy, Conan. But that's just my bet.
Yeah, it's just the equivalent of like, you know, if like, yo, let's go rob a bank. No, let's go rob a library, bro. Take all the encyclopedias. So then we'll have all the words. And nobody will have words because we got the words.
We got the words.
That's a plan.
Actually.
Now get your buffalo costume on.
You still got that? Hold on. It's in the attic, I think. Honey, where's the buffalo head? We're going to... Shut up. This is me doing me. We got to go steal the words from the library. Where is the... No, the buffalo head that I wear.
It's in the attic. I locked it up with the guns. This is verbatim conversation from one of their households.
Yeah, we actually got a transcript. We're just performing it. This is NPR. This is legitimate news. So tell me about your day today, because I know I'm catching you in a work week. You got a Saturday Night Live this week. So I know that yesterday was read through.
Yep.
So you kind of know what the show is going to be.
Yeah.
You have an idea of what it's going to be so far. Mm-hmm. How late in the process can you come up with something new? If you had a really funny idea maybe for update, late in the week or something,
yeah,
or someone had pitched you something. How late? Because I remember things were pretty set by Thursday. I mean, they had to be.
Well, update is like a cold open is definitely like, not that I come up with ideas for cold open. I never think about that. But like cold open will like the script will first see it Friday night or even Saturdays now.
Right.
And then update, you know, Friday, I didn't know I was doing Kanye until Friday evening.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay. And so then I was just on set. My music videos, me and Pete were shooting Trees at the time.
Yeah.
And so in between takes, I was like trying to get my Kanye down for that next day because I was like, oh, it's my first time in the cold open for real and like doing a character. And I ain't never really done Kanye. Like, I don't.
Oh, you hadn't?
I hadn't.
It was so funny. It was so good.
I appreciate it, man. Like, I try to, like, I love doing characters, obviously, but I don't, like, I didn't fancy myself an impressionist. I'm like,
right.
People I can have fun with. And that's one of my favorite things to watch is, like, watching, like, a Kate, like, a Andy Samberg, like, do impressions where some are like, oh, shit, that's, like, that's them. And then some, they're just having so much fun. Like,
right.
You're like, oh, they're bringing something new to this person that really didn't give them much to start with.
Right.
And they're just having a... And then you have people like James Austin Johnson who can be spot on and do both.
Yes,
and
he can
like,
do both.
Or like a Jay Farrell. You're like, oh, fuck, that's amazing. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Or Chloe or... I mean, there's plenty of people. I'm not going to name my whole cast. I love you guys.
And now the people you didn't mention. No, but I know that, you know, back in my day when Dana Carvey would do Bush... Welcome. He just kept stretching it out and making it, you know, we're not going to do it. Just became, Big Bush became, And he was stretching it so far out that it started to have nothing to do with George Bush Sr., but it was hilarious and fantastic. And I thought, oh, those are the impressions I really love,
right.
Is when someone, you know, your Kanye a year from now might be quite different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or your Cory Booker might find stuff and it starts to drift away from the actual person, but in a way become even more fun.
Yeah. Oh, especially Cory Booker. Cause he doesn't like, very well put together dude.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty just like, you know, passionate about things, caring. And that's pretty boring stuff when it comes to like a comedian who's looking for shit to make fun of. So like, I accentuate the things that I notice, but I notice face shit first. Like,
yeah.
I love facial expressions and like, and it was so fun, especially with Corey, because Corey doesn't like the impression that much. I do.
Is that true? It got back to you?
Yeah, because some people that work for him, they were like, we love it. So I'm like, he doesn't.
Yep.
That's usually how it works.
Because you're not hearing from him.
Yeah. And then Rosario Dawson did an interview, I think, with like TMZ, and she was like, I want to give SNL and Chris Redd some pointers. That's not her voice. Like I said, I'm not an impressionist.
Uh-huh.
But she's like, I want to give him some pointers on how to do Cory Booker. I'm like, nah, I love Rosario Dawson. I think she's incredible at everything, but giving me advice. And
you don't need tips from
it's like,
you got this.
I'm good. And Cory Booker fans like, his eyes don't do that. I'm like, are y'all not looking at this man? Anytime he's intense, his eyes get big.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah.
I love that. I love finding a little something and having fun with him. That's what all this shit is about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's fun. Her tips, by the way, were like, he's caring. He cares about a whole lot of things. He's super
passionate. That's so funny.
Hilarious. Hilarious. You know who else is funny? My pastor. What are we talking about, bro? Jesus Christ. He's passionate. He picks up puppies. Cool, man.
That's great. That's going to have him howling in the aisles.
I still love you, Luke Cage, though. You're super dope.
You know, I don't want to keep you because you got to get to work.
Yeah, it's a light week. We're good. you remember that? You know, I'm coming in.
Right now, Lauren is at SNL going like, where's Chris Redd? Oh, fuck. Where's my pop? What's happening? He's doing a thing with Conan. Is he still... It's a... podcast. Oh, that's
why
sad.
Why hasn't Conan turned into sketch yet?
I love Lauren.
Lauren, Conan left Saturday Night Live 72 years ago. Oh.
You never really leave.
Why hasn't Conan turned into sketch? I love that take. I don't see Conan much around this week. Yeah, he left in 1942 to go fight Hitler.
And he won and got the car as a...
Yeah, man, he had a good car. He had a nice car. Hey, Chris, I am just really happy that you could come in and do this. And
oh, man.
So happy for you, and you are brilliantly talented, but also, and I know this for a fact because I stood on a roof with you in San Diego. You haven't changed at all. You've got all this success. You were a really nice, honest, real person then. You're that guy now, and I'm just delighted.
Thank you so much, man. It means a lot. I will never change. I have better clothes now.
But you have much better clothes now.
Oh, God.
You were wearing towels. You had, when I knew you, you had had safety pins and you had taken hotel towels and made yourself a suit.
They were 300 count. To be very honest with you, they were very plush. But I would, like, literally, man, I love you. I love you, Conan, man. Like, You're I've always been a fan, and you're one of my favorite comics and late night hosts, and now podcasters.
Yeah.
But you're like,
and soon furniture salesman.
I love that because I need 50 couches.
Conan, I will take care of you.
But you're like, meeting you and the way you've been, you've looked out for me, man, is the way you like want every person that you look up to in this business to be like when you meet them.
Oh,
and,
that's nice.
And it's not that way. Yeah. And so it's really special when it is, and I really appreciate you, dude. And
just never impersonate me, because then I will shut you down.
Man, they'll give that to Mikey.
you don't think they're gonna give it to you?
Yeah, I was like, I got this dope Conan O'Brien. Oh, cool, man.
Okay,
you ever
really?
Thought about somebody else?
No, it's got to be Conan.
Got to be this week.
It's got to be this week.
It's got to be this week, and it's got to be Conan.
Hey, Chris Redd, thank you so much, and I'm just going to bug you all the time now.
Come on, man, hit me up.
I got a mixtape I want you to hear.
Dude, hey, I'm with it. I am with it. And this man gave me my special, man, so I'm going to finish that joint soon.
Okay, yeah,
I'm going to finish
good.
That shit.
Yeah, you finish that.
I'm going to finish that shit.
Because we gave you the money, yep. And you... You immediately spent it.
On a plane.
We didn't give you that much.
Nope.
That is one shitty plane.
I am
not getting in that plane.
It's called Uber Plane. One of the wings aren't on it, but right. It does fly.
I do not want to get yelled at by Lauren, so please go and have a great show.
Oh, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate you.
Let's do a little review the reviewers, where I read a review from Apple Podcasts. We discuss it.
Okay. I will gird myself. You know what that means? Gird yourself?
Yeah.
Like you gird your loins?
Yeah. You sort of tense up a little bit. You prepare yourself. You get ready. That's how I feel whenever someone says, oh, Conan, I heard this comment about you. I then gird myself. I prepare myself for potential pain.
Well, ungird yourself, because
no one said that in a long time. Ungird yourself, old friend.
The title of this review is Conan's Miracle Voice. It's a 5-star review, and it comes to us from Jim Jim Binks, assuming that's Jar Jar's brother. I listen to this podcast with my 9-year-old daughter in the car every week. A little bit of background. She is nonverbal, and when she was 4, I was told she would likely never talk. Today, when driving with my daughter while listening to the show, as Conan was talking about pens, my daughter loudly said, "Off, Conan," demanding I turn the show off. So the combined power of Sona, Matt, Conan, and Shaquille O'Neal gave voice to a once voiceless child. Since that moment, she has said more and more words. I am forever indebted to this podcast and its hosts for being so grating to my daughter's ears that she figured out how to use her vocal cords specifically to tell me to turn it off.
This is real? This is real.
I'm assuming. It could
insane.
Be fake, but it seems sincere.
That's crazy.
Isn't that sweet?
Wow.
I mean, first of all, I am legitimately happy that that this child is making progress. And if we're any small part of that, that's great. I wish it was in a slightly nicer cut. But I have to say, that is sounds like a miracle.
Oh. Yeah, Conan's miracle voice.
Well, yeah, but the negative power of my voice. I mean, you have to admit, it was the sheer impulse to get me to shut up.
I don't know.
That's amazing.
I feel like if it was during the pen conversation, she was probably like, he's being unreasonable.
Yeah,
turn him off. I think she wasn't.
Let's bring people up to date on what the pen conversation was. No. Do you guys know how to summarize it briefly?
Yeah. Sona, you say, because you had ordered him a bunch of pens, right?
Well, okay. All right. I didn't order him pens. I sent. We have a young man who helps us out, and he bought Conan some pens when Conan wanted them. Then a year and a half later, Conan opened up the bag of pens we got and found out they were fine tip instead of bold. And Conan texted me in such a aggressive manner that we ended up talking about it on the podcast. And I can see why she would want to turn that off. Because
I really,
oh.
I have to say, I really got into the weeds about the differences between the fine point and the bold point of this pen.
Yeah,
and I could see that anyone who had to listen to that would think, what a madhouse. This is a madman, and these people are enabling this madman. We now have proof that I'm insane and that I went way too far with those pens.
Yeah.
Because this child summoned the ability to speak out of the ether to get me to stop talking about the goddamn pens.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you guys were setting this up, I wanted to scream, off Conan!
Well, I bet even recapping it, if that child hears the recap, the child's going to make, you know, seven times the progress instantly.
Oh, she's going to do like Hamlet's soliloquy.
Yeah. Out of nowhere. Please, Conan, silence your wretched tongue. I cannot stand this clithering and pathering about pens. There are much larger issues in life you should be concerned with.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the stings of arrows.
I find Conan's actions to be unreasonable.
Once more, dear friends, unto the breach.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Wow. Well, I mean, all joking aside, that's lovely if that's the case. And it's sincerely very, very happy that this child is making such great progress. And also good to know that in my own backwards way, I have powers. I could go to one of those revival tents where they bring people up who have crutches, and I'll start going on about these pens, and the people will throw their crutches away, say I can walk, and then they will run out of the tent. People will come from miles around.
I haven't been able to see since childhood.
Well, I can tell you about these pens. Suddenly, eyesight returns so they can see the exit and dash out. It's a miracle!
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sona Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Becton. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.